Part 1, Guided Walking Tour Booking. Good morning, Green Line Community Services. This is Anna speaking. How can I help?
Hello, I'm calling because I would like to arrange a guided walking tour of the Old Market District. I saw the notice online, but I wanted to check the details before I book.
Of course.
For that request, you want the architecture and trade route tour. We also have advice tables, but the appointment gives you more time with a volunteer.
That sounds right.
I was worried I had chosen the wrong session because the website lists several different tables.
No problem.
First, can I take your full name, please?
Yes, it's Sophia Martin.
The surname is spelled Martin.
Thank you.
I have you down as a visitor. Can I take a contact number in case the volunteer needs to change the time? The number is 7,803,557,219. Let me repeat that because people sometimes mishear it. 7,803,557,219. Great, I have 7,803,557,219.
And the best email address.
Sophia
Martin at example.com.
Email is fine for the confirmation, but a phone call is better if anything changes on the day. We had places on 18 August, but that session filled this morning. There's one space on 19 August, although it's quite late in the day.
19 August is difficult for me.
Is there anything later in the month?
Yes, I can book you for 21 August at 2:15 p.m.
That's a quieter slot, so the volunteer should have time to look at the issue properly.
21 August at 2:15 p.m. works well.
Where exactly do I need to go?
I thought it was in the town hall steps.
It used to be there, but the room has changed.
The appointment will be in outside the west entrance of the Railway Museum.
We'll put signs at the entrance as well.
Thanks for clarifying.
Is there a charge?
The basic booking fee is £12.
The route includes cobbled streets, so large suitcases can't be taken.
That's clear.
What should I bring with me?
Please bring comfortable shoes and a printed booking code.
The session leader is Mr. Novak, and the confirmation email will include the same details.
Great.
If I can't attend, what should I do?
Please cancel at least 24 hours before the tour.
These appointments are popular, so early cancellation lets us offer the place to someone on the waiting list.
Understood.
So I'm booked for 21 August at 2:15 p.m. in outside the west entrance of the Railway Museum, and I need to bring comfortable shoes and a printed booking code.
That's right.
You'll receive the confirmation within 10 minutes.
Is there anything else I can help with?
No, that's everything.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
That's the end of part 1.
Part 2, Maritime Museum Visitor Briefing.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Maritime Museum Family Weekend. I'll explain the layout and the main changes before you start exploring.
The first change is the venue.
The event was originally advertised for Gallery 1, but it has moved to the Harbor Warehouse building. Please use the North Quay entrance. The other doors are for staff and deliveries only. When you arrive, go first to the ticket desk beside the anchor display. Even if you booked online, you need to collect a program and a small map because several locations changed yesterday.
If you need general help, the information point is left of the ticket desk near the cloakroom.
Refreshments are on the right next to the cafe terrace, and they'll be available for most of the day.
Now picture the site as a long rectangle
with the entrance behind you. On the left as you come in, the first area is for children's model boat workshop. If you continue along the left side towards the back, you'll reach archive photo displays. These areas are easy to confuse because both have volunteers in green shirts, so use the signs rather than the color of the shirts. On the right side, the first section is navigation simulator. Further along the right side, in the middle, you'll find local seafood demonstration. At the back right, there's a family rest space at the back right. Please note this correction. The seafood demonstration is in the middle of the right side, not beside the cafe. Some early programs printed the old position, so check the map you received today. A popular service today is the object handling table. It was listed as table 7, but it has moved to table 16. General guidance is available at table 3. The staff there can help you choose which activities are most relevant if you have limited time. The opening hours have also changed. Publicity said 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., but today's correct hours are 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. There will be a short welcome talk at 11:20 a.m. Remember that the object handling table closes at 4 o'clock, so don't leave that service until the very end. For practical arrangements, please bring the colored wristband from reception. If you complete stamps from 6 activity points, you can enter a draw to win a family ticket for the boat trip. The main demonstration has been moved to 1:40 p.m. because the morning setup took longer than expected. Finally, please move slowly through the narrow sections and leave the quiet area for people who need a break from the crowd. If you're unsure where to go, return to the information point rather than asking staff who are running demonstrations. Enjoy Maritime Museum Family Weekend and make sure you keep the updated program with you. That's the end of part 2. Part 3, research project on festival visitors. Come in, Maya and Chris. I have read your proposal on how small cultural festivals influence visitors spending in local shops. The topic is promising, but the method still needs tightening before you collect more data. That's exactly where we're stuck. I think we should focus on short interviews with shop owners after the festival weekend, because it gives us detailed comments and examples. I understand that, but I'm worried the sample will be too small. I would rather collect broader data by visitor questionnaires collected near the main stage. Both of you are partly right. I suggest matching shop interviews with a shorter visitor survey. The smaller method can show you what to ask, while the wider method can test whether those themes appear beyond a few people. My concern is time. If we do both, we might not finish the analysis properly. Then divide the work clearly. Maya will interview shop owners, and Chris will manage the visitor survey and spreadsheet. Don't both try to do every stage, or you'll duplicate effort and still feel behind. That split is fair, but I'm not sure what to include in the background section. We have too many articles. Start with a tourism impact report by Evans and Shaw. It summarizes the field and will help you select only the studies that connect directly to your research question. What about variables that might affect the result? We discuss some, but we have not listed them in the method. You need to control for weather, visitor age, and whether people stayed overnight. If you ignore those, your results may look clearer than they really are. I can add those to the survey. I'll also follow your advice to keep the spending question in ranges rather than asking for exact amounts. Good. Piloting will show whether the wording is clear and whether people understand the scale in the same way. We also need to talk about deadlines. The current final deadline is coming too quickly. The original deadline was 7 November. The department will allow an extension to 14 November but you must request it by 1 November. That helps, but you still need to see something before the final version, don't you?
Yes.
Send me a substantial draft by 9 November. It should include the introduction, method, and at least some early analysis. Could we meet again before that? I would like feedback on the interview coding. Let's meet on Monday, the 28th. Bring one coded interview extract and the survey draft, even if they aren't perfect. Should we change the research question to make it easier? Don't change the central question yet. Narrow the evidence instead. A focused mixed methods project is better than a broad project with shallow data. That makes sense. I'll keep the interviews focused on examples, not general opinions. And I'll make the survey shorter so people actually finish it.
Exactly.
Your aim isn't to collect the maximum amount of data. It's to collect data that answers your question clearly. That's the end of part 3. Part 4, lecture on heritage tourism.
Good morning.
Today's lecture is about heritage tourism and local identity. This subject matters because of the demand for authentic travel experiences in smaller towns. In many discussions, it's treated as a technical issue, but it also affects behavior, cost, planning, and public expectations. A useful term here's interpretive planning. By this, I mean the process of deciding which stories a site tells and how visitors encounter them. The definition is important because it moves us away from thinking about one isolated product or site and towards a system of decisions. One sector where this is visible is regional economic development. In that sector, small choices often accumulate. A single decision may not seem significant, but repeated across a campus, workplace, or city, it changes cost, risk, and the experience of people using the space. Evidence is developing. For example, a survey of coastal towns found longer visitor stays when tour connected buildings with local people's stories. This doesn't prove that every intervention will work everywhere, but it shows that carefully designed changes can produce measurable benefits when they fit the local context. There are limitations. Heritage narratives can oversimplify conflict or exclude less visible communities. This point is often missed in public debate. People like simple solutions, but environmental and social systems rarely respond to one action on its own. The main barrier is seasonal staffing and limited funds for guide training. Even when the evidence is persuasive, organizations have budgets, habits, and competing priorities. That's why implementation often depends on leadership as much as on technical knowledge. A practical example comes from a restored mill that increased repeat visits after training local residents as guides. The success came not from a slogan, but from changing the everyday process. People were given a simpler route to make the better choice, and the organization measured the result. Policy also has a role. One useful approach is grant schemes that require community consultation before tourism materials are produced. Such policies don't remove the need for judgment, but they make long-term thinking part of ordinary decisions rather than an optional extra. To conclude, the implication is that successful heritage tourism protects local meaning while still welcoming visitors. For students and professionals, the key lesson is to ask how a system behaves over time, who carries the cost, and which small decisions make the desired behavior easier. That's the end of part 4.